Okay. All right. Exodus chapter 11. And we come to this final plague. Of course, we know all of this is drawing to a close, this contest between God and Pharaoh. And we find in the last two chapters, 11 and 12, we learn a little bit about the Passover in this passage, of course. But we're not going to spend a whole lot of time dealing with the Passover. I thought we might, but I changed my mind on that. We're not going to really get into that. We'll obviously read about it because it is introduced here in this particular context, chapter 12. But really, as we think about everything that has happened and think about chapters 11 and 12, one word that comes to mind is obedience. Because Moses obviously is obeying God. We know he kind of got off to a rough start with this part of his life and his role as helping God to set Israel free. He hesitated a little bit, but ever since the plagues have come forth, he has been doing exactly what God has commanded him to do. And of course, this is a study about Moses, so we shouldn't overlook the fact that all of that would take a lot of faith, trust in God, and his willingness to comply to what God was telling him to do, and going over and over back to Pharaoh. And he no doubt understood or believed that he was under the protection of God the further this went on. But it still is a matter of trust and obedience. And even we'll find in these chapters, even the people of God, even the Israelites, demonstrate their willingness to comply to what God says. Now, again, we know the history of Israel. We know they kind of get off track, that overall in their history, they turn out to be kind of a stiff-necked people and stubborn. But right now, you know, they're just developing as a nation. Hard to even call them a nation yet, but they are complying. At least in these chapters, they comply to everything that God tells them to do. And what I want us to think about, the thing that we can learn in this, is the importance of obedience. I think we know that in churches of Christ. But do we really obey God, even in the little things, in our day-to-day lives? Are we walking obediently to everything that God commands us to do? If there's a struggle that we have along those lines, it's never really in knowing God's will. It's in doing God's will. Because God's will is pretty clear. I know there are things in the Bible that are hard to understand, that sort of hard passages and things. But when it comes down to doing God's will, he hasn't made anything complicated. So none of us, myself included, we don't struggle with knowing what God would have us to do or how he would have us to live. If we struggle anywhere, it's in the carrying out of his will. And we, again, can learn from these chapters that God is a God who demands obedience, even down to details. And we see that as we go on here. So let's look at this in chapter 11. At verse 1, it says, "The Lord said to Moses, 'Yet one plague more, and I will bring upon Pharaoh and upon Egypt. I will bring upon Pharaoh and Egypt. Afterwards, he will let you go from here. When he lets you go, he will drive you away completely.'" But watch verse 2. "Speak now into the hearing of the people that they ask every man of his neighbor and every woman of her neighbor for silver and gold jewelry." And I think we just started to touch on that last week. But when you stop and think about it, kind of a strange command, isn't it? Strange instructions. If you put yourself in the shoes of the Israelites, here you can imagine what they think. We're slaves. We've been slave laborers for all of these years. Most of them would, all of them really would have to say all of our lives. You want us to go to our captors, our masters, and tell them to give us their silver and gold? And that would be odd. They didn't know. God knows what he is doing, obviously, here. He's not just telling them to do that, to plunder the Egyptians just because. And by the way, it's kind of enlarged here. You remember that when God first brought this up, that they were to do that, only the women were included in that. But now it's the men and the women to go to their neighbors. Because, you know, the Egyptian men, they'd have a whole lot of jewelry too. You know, they had their earrings and bracelets and collars of gold and all of that, just like the women in a lot of cases. So both of them are commanded to go. And it's kind of a strange command. But God knew they're about to take a trip. And so what do you do when you're about to go on a trip? What do you do? Get some money, don't you? Go to the ATM or whatever. Go to the bank. Get some money. They're being financed. This little trip is being financed. More than that, though, where all of this jewelry is going to go later on, it's going to finance the temple, the tabernacle that they're going to build. In Exodus chapter 25, we read a little bit about that. It's not the only source, but that is where a lot of this is going. In other words, God's not telling them to plunder the Egyptians here just for their own personal prosperity. It's more than that. Not even for the national prosperity. It is going to go to a large degree to the temple and the temple furniture and all of that. So but the point here is they don't know any of that. They don't know anything about some tabernacle that's going to be in their future, a place where they will commune with God. And they don't know any of that. All they know, all they have is Moses saying, here, this is what I want you to do. I want you to go to your neighbor and you know, ask for the silver and gold. And what do they do? What do the children of Israel do along those lines? They do it. We call that obedience, don't we? They do what God, no matter how strange it may have sounded, they do what God tells them to do. It'd been wonderful if the Israelites continued to be like that throughout their history. And it's really, obedience is not a complex thing. It's just a matter of doing whatever it is that God tells you to do. It doesn't matter if you like it or not. It doesn't matter if you understand why he's telling you to do whatever it is he's commanding. You just do it. And it's really that simple. And when you look back at all of the great Bible personalities, that even the ones that we're studying, that Moses and Joseph and Abraham and throughout, the thing that they had in common was but in their overall life, we should say, they complied to God. Now they were just men and you know, some of the great women in the Bible, just women, and so they fell short from time to time. They stumbled once in a while, but in their overall life, it was always a life of obedience. And that's all, that always works out in your favor when you obey God. And we have a stark contrast here of Moses doing what God tells him to do, and the Israelites doing what God instructs them to do, and everything works out well. How are things working out for Pharaoh? Not so good. Not so good. Because he, throughout this thing, does the very opposite. He refuses to obey. And so we can learn something. Remember, these things written aforetime are written for our learning. Now, God knows that this is a strange situation and they're going to need his help. Verse 3 says, "And the Lord gave the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians. Moreover, the man Moses was very great in the land of Egypt in the sight of Pharaoh's servants and in the sight of the people." And so what a change. It hadn't been that long ago where nobody liked Moses. Everybody was mad at Moses. Pharaoh and his servants and even his own people were upset because it seemed like he was making things worse. But now we fast forward to after these first 9 plagues, and his name is great. His influence is great in the land of Egypt, it says. And so that has changed. Now, as we begin getting into this at verse 4, we're going to find 5 facts that Moses sets forth, and they're unmovable. At verse 4 it says, "And Moses said, thus says the Lord, about midnight I will go out in the midst of Egypt." And God, again speaking through Moses, but that's about to happen. God is about to go out in the midst of Egypt. Now, you can imagine, it just, again, kind of put yourself back in this situation. And here now, Moses is speaking, God speaking through Moses to Pharaoh and his people around, his servants, certainly. This had to instill great fear in their hearts. Because when God says, I'm coming, I'm going to be in your midst, you think they thought, oh, that's a positive thing? No. He's not coming into their midst just because. 9 plagues have been set forth, and they're about to get another one. And they're about to find out how devastating this last one will be. But this is a fact. It's going to happen. Remember what we said last week? No more let my people go. Time for repenting is gone. He's setting forth 5 facts that are going to happen, and they're going to happen quickly. So he says, number 1, he's going into their midst. Number 2, and every firstborn in the land of Egypt shall die. And you notice the scope of that. No one is escaping this plague. And he makes sure that Pharaoh understands, Pharaoh, this means you too. It's going to affect your household. You have a firstborn, you're going to lose them. And so he says, he goes on to say, from the firstborn of Pharaoh, who sits on his throne, even to the firstborn of the slave girl who is behind the handmill, and all the firstborn of the cattle. So all the firstborn, men, beast, all the firstborn are going to die. Now you're one of those servants. And again, this had to terrify you. Because a part of you had to realize he hasn't been bluffing at all. All of these plagues that he has announced, remember 3 of them weren't announced, but they have all come about. So when he says, and you hear those words coming from God through Moses, all the firstborn are going to die. That had to be devastating. But there's nothing they can do about it now. It's going to happen. And again, how you just stop and think of the extent of all of that. Look at the third fact there at verse 6. There shall be a great cry throughout all the land of Egypt. And notice the extent of that. Such as there has never been, nor ever will be again. And that's a fact. All of this is true, isn't it? Like, there's no hyperbole here. There's going to be grief in Egypt like they have never known. And to this very moment, they have never known it again. In fact, no one has ever known the level of grief that they are about to experience. Like, you just stop and think about that. I know something about losing a child, and that there's grief in that you just don't recover from. It doesn't go away. In fact, it's one of the only kind of griefs that almost gets worse as time goes on rather than better. And you understand, that's one person, one family. What if the firstborn of just a child in someone's house, you just take one block here in this area. If every child on a particular block died the same night, you think there'd be a lot of grief? An entire block. Or you extrapolate that a little bit. What about an entire community? What if every household that had a child in the Firestone Park area on the same night died? Could you imagine that kind of grief? And you know where I'm heading in all of this. You just go out. What about in an entire city? Every house in Akron where there was a child died. That would be a lot of grief. What about an entire state? We can't even fathom an entire country that every firstborn in an entire country lost a child. That where there was a firstborn, they lost that firstborn. There's some translations, I can't remember exactly how it's worded, but here the ESV says, there shall be a great cry. Some translations use the word wail. A loud wail. Something along those lines. Someone have a translation that says wail? Can't remember what translation says that. But that is about it. Go ahead, Jake. Your New American, what does it say? No, that's all right. That's right. It's the same thing, except for whale. You know, you think, then I think about hell. The wailing, gnashing of teeth, that sort of thing. But it makes it sound more like a real, actual, verbal thing. And that doesn't surprise anyone. In fact, can you imagine, if you really put yourself in their shoes, if you heard this, if you were one of the servants of Pharaoh, and you heard this firsthand, I mean, God announcing your firstborn is going to die. And all these plagues have happened. They've come about. So you know, God doesn't bluff. He's not bluffing. That night, you have a firstborn. Where would you be that night when your firstborn went to bed? You'd be right there, wouldn't you? I would. You'd be hoping, maybe, you know, he's never got anything wrong yet. It has all happened, but maybe this time it won't. And you're just hoping and hoping that this is not going to happen. I mean, you're talking about real people in real life. You wouldn't just, if these plagues happen and you know that they have happened just exactly as the one who spoke about this said it would, and he announces your firstborn is going to die, would you just shrug that off? Probably not. Unless you're Pharaoh and you got your heart so hard and stubborn. But, I mean, and then when it happens and every house is affected. So there's this great cry. And remember, this is a fact that is set forth. The third fact that he sets forth that it's too late. You can't do anything about it. These are just things that are about to happen. And then the fourth one. He says at verse 7, but not a dog shall growl against any of the people of Israel, either man or beast, that you may know that the Lord makes a distinction between Egypt and Israel. And so it's not going to affect the people of God at all. Of course, they're going to in order for that to happen, they're going to have to do something that we know of. We'll get to that in just a minute. They're going to have to follow the instruction of God, but they do, and so they're not affected by this at all. God does make a distinction between his people and other people. And in this case, again, though, it boils down to a matter of obedience. And then the fifth one at verse 8, it says, and all of these your servants shall come down to me and bow down to me, saying, get out, you and all the people who follow you. And after that, I will go out. And so what's going to happen? The fifth fact is going to be, they are going to let Israel go. And then you think to yourself, what a waste of time. From Pharaoh's standpoint, it's not a waste of God's time. What's happening again with all of these plagues? That's right. That's right. He's being glorified and will be glorified for generations to come, really forever because of this. So it's not a waste of time. God knows exactly what he's doing. But you think about from Pharaoh's standpoint and the lesson for us. Listen, God's will is going to be done, period. You don't have to like it. You can ignore it. You can try to laugh it away. But his will is going to take place. Obedience accomplishes absolutely nothing. Pharaoh could have just done what God told him to do in the very beginning and let his people go and would have avoided all this grief. But he didn't. And one plague after another, now he loses his firstborn son. And what happens with Israel? They go. I mean, isn't that a vivid illustration of, listen, just do what God tells you to do. Because he's going to get what he wants in the end anyway. You can't fight against God and win. And Pharaoh found out that the hard way, and a lot of people are still struggling with that. Think of all the people in the world today that won't do what God tells them to do. And somehow they think that's going to work out for them. But it's not. It never does. And so he goes out, and he went out from Pharaoh in hot anger. That's Moses. And then the Lord said to Moses, Pharaoh will not listen to you, that my wonders may be multiplied in the land of Egypt. Moses and Aaron did all these wonders before Pharaoh, and the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he did not let the people of Israel go out of his land. But he's going to. When the plague actually comes, we know exactly what's going to happen. They're going to beg the people of Israel to leave. And now, keep in mind, I think I made mention to you last week about all of this, that this is chronologically a little bit misplaced. At least most scholars believe that that's the case. And it does make more sense when you realize, like if you go back to the beginning of chapter 11, the first three verses happened before verse 24 of chapter 10, where God tells Moses about this one final plague that he's going to set forth. And that's why it really, the Hebrew is the Lord had said to Moses. And then this speech that Moses gives happened someplace towards the end. And people put it different places in chapter 10, some between 27 and 28, wherever. I can't really make it where, but at before Pharaoh sends him out, and Pharaoh's mad and says, I better not see your face again. That probably at the end of all of that, at the end of the chapter, that where we have Moses leaving, said, okay, I won't see your face again, that he gave that speech first. And he leaves out, and his anger is hot. Because Moses knows this is a waste of time for you. And it's tragic. And it doesn't have to be. Now we're about to have all of this sorrow throughout the land of Egypt just because you're so stubborn you won't let God's people go. And he really is just tired of Pharaoh and his stubbornness and his disobedience and him claiming he's going to let the people of God go and then reneging on it and all of that. So Pharaoh's mad at him. Don't you come, I better not see your face again. And he leaves and he's red hot, but not before he tells him about all of this and what this final plague is going to be. And now by the end of chapter 11, Moses is done with Pharaoh. He has nothing more to do with him other than when he calls him back to send him away. There is no real conversation or anything like that. Now Moses' attention is turned to the people, to the Israelites. And that's where we pick up in chapter 12, where it says in verse 1, and the Lord said to Moses and to Aaron in the land of Egypt, this month shall be for you the beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year for you. So this is really setting the stage historically for the nation of Israel. And this, again, from now on, in the Hebrew calendar, then this would be Abib. It was the name of this first month before the Babylonian captivity. Afterwards, it was Nisan. But this is the first month where this feast is going to be put in place, the Passover. And they are going to observe it, at least they are supposed to observe it, for the rest of their existence as a nation. And we know the significance, of course, of the Passover. As I said earlier, we won't do a big study of all of that. But that's what is about to be instituted. So he says, tell all the congregation of Israel that on the 10th day of this month, every man shall take a lamb according to their fathers, their father's houses, a lamb for a household. And if the household is too small for a lamb, then he and his nearest neighbor shall take according to the number of persons, according to what each can eat, you shall make your count for the lamb. Your lamb shall be without blemish, a male a year old. You may take it from the sheep or from the goats, and you shall keep it until the 14th day of this month, when the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill their lambs at twilight. Now, stop and think. Is God a God of detail? It's amazing how this faith only business and how works don't matter, all that stuff, how that crept into the religious world is unbelievable to me. Like, if we really believe that God is this great, all-powerful, sovereign God, why in the world wouldn't we conclude almost automatically, we better do what he tells us to do? And then when we get into the Word of God, we see whenever he's given instructions to the people of God, it's always detailed. Like, they have to do exactly what God tells them to do here. The lamb that they are to get has to be a male without blemish. And not almost without blemish, not kind of without blemish. It had to be without blemish. And you want to see how far the children of Israel eventually they get, even after they come back from captivity. What did they do when they came back from Babylonian captivity? Any remember? In their sacrifices. What were they doing? Malachi tells us. Right. They sacrificed the lame and the blind. Like, how offensive to God. They knew better than that from their very beginning, even when they're first being formed as a nation. The will of God was a lamb without blemish. It's what God has always demanded. And they come back from captivity, and they don't, they're, so far as we know, they didn't commit the idolatry like they were. But to even think, oh, this would be all right. And you remember God said, where's my honor? You won't even give that to your governor, to your earthly ruler. And you're trying to offer a sacrifice to me like that? And what lesson is there for? Is there any lesson at all in there for us? To do what he says, give God your best. What an insult to God when we give him anything less than our absolute best. I've said a lot of times, I don't know why it is, we want to give our best in almost every walk of life until it comes to serving God. And we kind of go halfway. And I want straight A's in school, we want to be the best on our job and everything, but when it comes to personal work, it's all right if I'm just okay. No big deal. Your knowledge, yeah, I could probably know more, but I know enough. Why is it when it comes down to God, we want to give less than our best? And you can just picture God on his throne saying to us, where's my honor? Why would you give your best to your job and second best to me? So, yeah, that probably is right. It's sometimes, and that's the problem. That's a big flaw that we have, and it all points back to obedience. Remember what I said in the very beginning of all of this? We struggle with obedience. I'm talking about in details. And we can't forget God is a God of details. Because, you know, overall, we're obedient. Like, here you are tonight. You've come, and I've told you before, I appreciate the Wednesday night crowd. Because, you know, here you are, and this is probably the hardest service to come to. Most of you worked all day, but you're here. A lot of our number aren't here. Where are they? And so I appreciate that. But we have an attitude. Yeah, here's some things I know I need to do. I know on Sunday where I'm supposed to be. I'm going to be there. And you know, I know this moral law I have to keep and things. But in little details sometimes, we don't give God our best. And we think somehow God's just going to ignore that. why we really need to have a repentant heart. Ask God to forgive us every day. And he is faithful and just to forgive us. But we need to be mindful of our own weaknesses and do our very best to know this is the kind of God that we serve. He hasn't changed. He's always been the same. He always will be the same. He expects his people to do exactly what he says. And so the Israelites are kind of going to get away from that. Right here, they are doing what he tells them to do. And again, look at when you look at these things down at verse 7, it gets into the deeper into the Passover situation there, or what they were to do. Anyway, it says, and then they shall take some of the blood and put it on the two doorposts and on the lintel of the house in which they eat it. And they shall eat the flesh that night, roasted on fire with unleavened bread. Bitter herbs they shall eat it. With bitter herbs they shall eat it. Do not eat any of it raw or boiled in water, but roasted, its head and its legs and its inner parts. And you shall let none of it remain until the morning. Anything that remains until the morning you shall burn. In this manner you shall eat it, with your belt fasted, your sandals on your feet, and your staff in your hand. And you shall eat it in haste. It is the Lord's Passover. Now, again, a lot of details there. And not just details, but things that don't really wouldn't make a whole lot of sense to them. Like, eat it with the sandals on your feet. They didn't wear sandals in the house at those days. Like, when are belts fastened around us? We're eating dinner? Didn't make a whole lot of sense. But God knew. They were going to be on the go here. But none of this, they haven't done any of this before. Roasted a lamb like that, or caught its blood and put it on the doorpost. All of that was strange. Do you read in here anywhere where they questioned it? No. They just did it. We call that obedience. That's exactly what they should have done. It was the only way they were going to survive. But the point is, they just did what God told them to do. And look at it from God's standpoint. He didn't tell them to go back and think about it. Or let's go talk about it and see if it makes sense to you. God didn't care about that. He didn't care if it made sense to them or not. This was his plan. The only thing it required is what? Obedience. That's it. All they had to know, this is what God wants you to do. And they recognized that to their credit, and they did it. And so none of them died in all of this. Only the firstborn of Egypt. And so that's a blessing. Again, as I said earlier, it'd have been great if that's the way Israel would have been their whole lives as a nation. If they would have maintained that kind of attitude. But we know they didn't. Well, now let's drop a little bit and you see again they do all the things that God tells them to. Verse 14, this day shall be for you a memorial day, and you shall keep it as a feast to the Lord throughout your generations, as a stature forever. You shall keep it as a feast. And then he goes on in these next verses down through about verse 25 or so, gives a lot more details of the Passover, which one of these days we might study, but not now. But look at verse 26. It says, and when your children say to you, what do you mean by this service? You shall say, it is the sacrifice of the Lord's Passover, for he passed over the houses of the people of Israel in Egypt when he struck the Egyptians, but spared our houses. And what a great way here to just think about how things are to pass along. And again, the Israelites kind of failed in this ultimately. But how things are to pass along from generation to generation. And instruction really for all God's people, for those of you who are parents and those of us who are grandparents. You know, kids children have a tendency to ask questions, don't they? And sometimes they ask challenging questions. Should we just shrug them off? No. No. And God is instructing his people. Now here, when your children come and ask you about that, why are you doing this? And you tell them, this is why. And what a great lesson it is. And his mercy for his love for his people and all of that, as well as his power and strength in defeating the Egyptians, all of that would be passed on from generation to generation if they were willing to do that. Your children ask you, you tell them. And we have those opportunities sometimes. You know, your children, Mom, why do you give? Every week you put money in that plate. Have a chance to tell them, don't you? Why don't you do this? Or why do we not, you know, my friends at school, they're able to do this or that. Why don't we? You can tell them. Give them book, chapter, and verse. Give them an answer. If they question you about anything that you do, about your lifestyle as a Christian, and why we're different from people that they know and they go to school with and that sort of thing, it just give them an answer. Don't shrug them off. Don't act like they're a nuisance to you. You don't have time for that. You give them an answer. And that faith passes on to them. And then it goes on and on. And that's God's plan. That's his plan for the Israelites with regard to the Passover here. So what do they do? Then it says at verse 27 or verse 28, then the people of Israel went and did so as the Lord had commanded Moses and Aaron. So they did. And so they complied. They were obedient in all of these things. Well, we get to verse 29. We'll pick up there and we'll see then that the plague actually takes place. And of course, it's devastating to the Egyptians. So we'll pick up there next week.